You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, November 24th, 2010. This is episode 159, A Show of Intrigue. It's good to have you all back for another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast. This is Martin Spriggs, your host, and I'm joined as usual by my co-host, Sally Draper in Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin, and happy Thanksgiving week to you. We have a lot to be thankful for here on the Wells Tech Podcast.
We do. Just thankful for another opportunity to be on the air, and I guess I am really thankful for the listeners that we have and the ability to dialogue with them each and every week. We've been doing this for 159 episodes now. That translates into coming up on 3 years, is that right?
Our fourth year in January. Yep. That's right. Yep. So it has been a good run, and mm-hmm. I have learned so much in the process, just like you said, from our listeners. It's been a pleasure to learn and to make immediate use of the things we're learning in our congregational settings. So that's what we do it for.
Yep. A lot of Thanksgiving. God has blessed, I think, the community that has developed, and we're going to show some examples of that community in action as we look at some listserv conversations and just the number of people we've met, you know, over the past 3 years and interviews. And we've got another interview coming up with our first vicar, you know, on the show. So that's kind of exciting.
The Wells Tech vicar. Go down in history.
Inaugural Wells Tech vicar interview.
That's right. So you guys are experiencing some warm temperatures over there for Thanksgiving, huh?
Oh, yeah. In mid-20s. So we're breaking out the tank tops and flip-flops.
Nothing like challenging weather for the busiest travel time of the year. So, well, we hope everyone is safe and has a wonderful celebration and relaxing celebration as well.
But technology is immune to the weather, and the topic that we're talking about today is actually apropos because the technology of web conferencing is put to good use when there are geographic distances that separate the people that you want to communicate with. And we've talked about web conferencing / video conferencing in the past, but our interview with Vicar Donald Tilbury kind of brought this to the fore too, as he's using some technology to share some stuff with confirmation class. And we thought maybe it'd be a good time to review the technologies that are out there. This is an evolving space, so as we move along through the years, these things just get better and better. And the good news is that some very cool tools, good useful tools, are available for very low or no cost.
That's right. Right away, I think it's important to address what exactly web conferencing mm-hmm. is, because it may be a brand new topic to some people.
Right.
And we've actually been using it in the Synod offices for several years and allowing many of our disjointed groups that are all over the country or even all over the world to connect. And one of the big things with web conferencing is being able to share your desktop. Now, what that means is, Martin, you and I are in two different locations, but say I would be able to see your computer screen at the same time you are manipulating information on the screen. Mm-hmm. So I could watch you do a presentation or look at a document that you're typing in even and see it real time and be able to connect and talk about that potentially as well.
Right. It just adds, and this has been around in the business world for a long time now, relatively speaking, and it just adds a visual component to a meeting or to a session, a workshop, whatever, and gives you the ability to add some imagery to make that person feel as if they were a little bit closer to the presenter or a part of the conversation, as we'll hear in the interview. obviously brings a classroom closer together where you can add virtual students and they can all be seeing the same thing at the same time.
And so, you know, in contrast would be just a more traditional audio-only conference call where we're all going to get on the phone and have this 3 or 4 or 5 or 6-way telephone call. Mm-hmm. And this, like you said, just allows us to also have a visual, not just the audio, as part of that conference. And that can be really valuable, I would think, in ministry settings. Mm-hmm. Being able to teach remotely, being able to collaborate on some cool classroom projects. Maybe you want to connect with another classroom on the other side of the world or whatever. This might be a tool that you could use to do that. And certainly it's going to save you some money if you're used to having to travel to meetings and things, you know, to have an internet connection that allows you to simulate the same kind of face-to-face meeting is a valuable thing.
I'm seeing a lot of ministry applications both on the church side and the school side, and as people get more comfortable with this, and clearly there are many tools related to this as people get comfortable using whiteboards, and you can even record some of these sessions for asynchronous uses, but really the sweet spot for these tools is a synchronous solution where people are, you know, on the same call or in the same meeting at the same time. So maybe we can jump into just some examples of some of the tools that are out there, and there are many now. I think we've identified 4 free ones, and I think all of these have their strengths and weaknesses, but mostly they do the same thing. They do screen sharing.
That's right. So when you go to any of these 4 websites, you're more than likely going to have to download a little bit of software from them to run on your computer to allow this all to work. That's the magic. Mm-hmm. And then you basically are allowed to kick off a session and share a web address with the people you want to include in that session. And magically, they see your computer screen and whatever you're doing on your computer screen. They're able to view that. You may even be able to give them control of your computer so that they can manipulate the things on your computer. And it's really quick and easy to do with all of these.
Some of these double as remote assistance tools, where you can give control over to somebody else if you have a technical issue that needs solving. And I know many of our listeners serve in that capacity where they are tech support, if not for church and school staff, for family, you know, remote family members. And some of these tools allow the family member to log into a website and say, hey, I'm going to give you control over my screen, or at least at the very least you can watch me as I do what you're saying. There's nothing more frustrating than trying to walk somebody through a couple of steps and then saying, well, what are you seeing now? Is there a button in the upper left-hand corner? What does it say? What are the menu options? And so on and so forth. It'd be so much easier if everybody was looking at the same thing. So there's a double application here for support. And this first one, TeamViewer, which we've talked about in the past, is a perfect example where we're beginning to use it here in the Synod office for remote support. I use it for remote controlling different applications. For instance, from my office, I can go to my home Mac. It works on Mac or PC. And also there are iPhone and iPad apps that support this as well. So I could actually control a computer that's got this set up with an iPhone or an iPad. I think Rob Benson even mentioned this when he was on the last time. He's our security analyst here in the Synod office, where he showed off his iPad, and this was one of the applications that he was really excited about because he has access to then any system within the Synod office or within our data center, and he can control it right from his iPad.
Yeah, great example of a use for that. But I love that you mentioned supporting your family members. I know our techie listeners all get called on for that kind of thing. So I should pause here. We're going to stop the official Wells Tech podcast and just do a quick shout out to my mom down in Mississippi, because this is just the thing we'll use, Mom. I know what you're thinking. We got to get your computer straightened out. So yep. I can relate. The next one on our list is join.me. This is the one I'm probably most excited about. It's a new one and we'll actually hear Vicar Tilbury talk about this one in our interview with him. It's what he's using, and just a super simple interface, and in no time at all, you're up and running with a shared desktop.
Mm-hmm. And next one we've talked about also, Vue, and we've got that crazy Web 2.0 spelling, V-Y-E-W. And this has all the bells and whistles of all the other ones, kind of a slick interface, and continues to work well. I think they've made some improvements over the last 6 to 12 months. And you have a virtual whiteboard concept. And again, it's the same concept where you send a link to somebody, they enter their username. There's a little download or a plugin that typically they will install, and it becomes this little virtual online session that they can join and participate in.
And lastly, Martin, you and I experimented last week with Makogo. This is one that Gil shared with us back on episode 147 of the Wells Tech podcast, a new one on the scene. And we really were impressed with Makogo. Very snappy response
Very
time.
Very real time, yep.
Yeah, and I think when I shared my desktop with you, you saw both my screens because I have a dual monitor kind of situation.
Right, that was cool.
So, yeah, you're able to see both of them. They actually have a YouTube channel and some really impressive videos out there. I got a kick out of their main video that they kind of use as promo for the product. It starts with kind of a slideshow look, and it says, you know, how much people travel and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to get to the point in the slideshow. It's right near the beginning. $770 billion a year spent on travel, and 23% of business travelers fall asleep in a meeting. So I thought it was funny to kind of draw that out, that, you know, you're paying all this money to get people to meetings, and they end up falling asleep a quarter of the time. So why not engage them in an online meeting instead?
Mm-hmm. And a little side note, you and I, Sally, were kind of throwing around, what does Makogo mean? And I scoured their website for the meaning of Makogo and could not find it. And so I'm going to challenge our users. And I found out what it was through a Web 2.0 tool. And I'm not going to tell you how I did that, but I now know what Makogo means. And I'm going to ask for anybody out there who has a desire to look that up, and we do have some people that will take some of those challenges and run with it. In listener feedback next week, give us what the word Makogo means, or your best guess. I'm not going to tell you.
A little challenge for our listeners. I
and
love
we're going to have another little challenge related to our contest around that word as well. So stay tuned for that. Lots of intrigue in the show today.
Oh, my goodness.
So Makogo, very good. I think of all of these, actually, Sally, I can't actually rate these because I think they all do an excellent job. And they all I think, do a couple things. They do excellent screen sharing, and you can share not just screen but application by application. They also do a great job at remote access, so you can turn control over, or in the case of a couple of these, you can have them just running in the background for you just to sign in and use an unattended machine, which essentially becomes a great way to control servers or unattended machines like I do at home. So
now, one thing that they may be missing, I'm not sure if any of these provide voice over IP integrated with the web conferencing and screen sharing.
That's a great question. I know TeamViewer does not, but what some of them do, and I think Makogo is one, and I think Vue is another, where they provide a audio conferencing number. Usually it's a toll number, so it's a, you know, an area code. It's not an 800 number. And there are a lot of those services out there that they've made some relationships with, and there is, so you're going to get dinged the regular toll charges, but at least you have the ability to get more than one person on the line at the same time.
But you know me, I'm a fan of free instead of paying for things.
Yep.
So, and I, apparently Vicar Tilbury is too, because you're going to hear again in his interview that instead of paying for a telephone service, he's using Skype.
If you have the ability, right, if you have the microphone and the speakers set up to do that, Skype is a great way to just add the, to bolt on the audio, so to speak. And so you're basically totally IP.
And if you want to pay the fee for a Skype out, which I think is around $30 a year, you could call out to regular phone lines using the Skype service.
So very cheap
the
rates.
The person on the other side wouldn't need to necessarily have Skype on their computer or their that kind of setting or whatever. So lots of options there to add free audio to your web conference as well.
So let's hear about some real-world settings or real-world, easy for me to say, real-world uses for this kind of technology. We found out about Vicar Donald Tilbury through our tweeting teacher, Jason Schmidt, who actually we'll have on the show next week. And he mentioned some cool things that they were doing down in Omaha at Gethsemane. And one of those cool things was some video conferencing or web conferencing that they were using for catechism class. So we asked Vicar Tilbury to join us. And as we mentioned, he is our first vicar on the show. So glad to have him aboard. And he shared with us some things that he is doing with Skype. And as you mentioned, join.me. So let's listen to our conversation with Vicar Tilbury. Joining us today is Vicar Donald Tilbury from Gethsemane in Omaha, Nebraska. Good morning, Donald.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing well.
Thanks so much for joining us. We came across your name via one of our longtime listeners, Jason Schmidt, and he suggested we maybe would be interested in talking with you about a couple of innovative things you're doing with technology. And maybe before we start in with some of those innovations, you can tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're serving, hobbies, family, that kind of stuff, whatever you want to share.
Oh, okay. I'm currently serving at Gethsemane Lutheran Church in Omaha as a vicar, so I'm in my third year at the seminary, my year out, I guess you would say, like an internship. I actually dabble in technology myself a lot. I do a lot of computer repairs and a few other things. I like exploring and creating databases, so this is kind of fun for me already, so it's nice to be able to share this with you.
Cool.
I'm actually currently engaged, and now...
congratulations.
Thank you. The wedding's December 30th, so if you're in Watertown, you can join us.
We don't get too many vicars on the show. In fact, you might be the first. Sal, do you recall another vicar being interviewed?
I can't say that I do.
So that's a first for you, Donald. So you're in the Nebraska district, and they came to you with a request not too long ago.
Yes, they did. One of the churches out in Iowa, in Burlington, Iowa, Our Savior, actually their pastor retired, and they couldn't, or I guess they decided not to call another pastor. It just wasn't in their budget. So they actually came up with the idea of Skyping with us for catechism class, because they have two students left in there that are both in the eighth grade, and the parents really wanted them to finish out catechism class. So it more or less began with the parents, which was really nice.
Yep.
And then you mentioned that you were using Skype to do that, so pretty much you were connecting for audio-only sessions with these kids?
At first, it was... Yes, it was audio, and then we used the video with Skype because we only had one student at the time. But the thing that really made it possible was our smart board. Our smart board, we were able to share a desktop screen, and we use it with catechism. We're able to write out our notes, save the notes as we write on them. And so what happened was with Skype, we would have their video of the student, and then we would share our desktop with them so they could follow along on the notes, because the 1.3 megapixel camera wasn't actually doing quite the job that we needed it to do. So with the introduction of a second student, though, we had a lot of problems, actually. We tried a lot of programs to just use one program to share both audio and video, but nobody wanted to spend the money on it, because it does kind of get to be a hassle with that. so we ended up using Skype for the audio because we could actually call both of our students in Burlington, Iowa. And then we used a web program called Join Me, which would allow us to share our desktop with both of the students.
So you're using a combination of Skype and Join Me. So as I understand, just so I'm clear on what the setup was, you actually had a regular confirmation class going, and in that classroom you had a smart board, so you had a physical class, and then you had two virtual students join, right?
Yeah, that is correct.
Okay.
So they're participating real-time, they're able to ask you questions and things like that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Both of them, usually we end up calling on them quite a bit just to make sure that they're involved with the lesson, but they know that they can shout out a question if they have one or join in conversation if there's any. All the students can hear them and we can hear them well. And it seems to be working because both of the parents of the students are actually sitting in on the lessons. And they actually enjoy it quite a bit, too.
How about that? So just reactions in general, are the kids learning? And what about the kids that are in the traditional classroom setting? Are they enjoying having some virtual classmates as well?
Well, the learning process, I think it took a while to actually get everyone settled, because it was such a new thing and we were experiencing some difficulties before we finally worked out the kinks, that it kind of disrupted the class at first. But now that they're used to actually having the two virtual students talk and them actually respond back to them, they seem quite comfortable right now with it.
Kids are pretty adaptable to technology, it seems.
They are. A lot of the public school kids that we have actually are already familiar with the smart board because they have them at their school already, so it's nothing new to them. For Reagan and Sawyer, our two that are in Burlington, Iowa, it seems to be working just fine because they can see us right on. We actually send them our catechism lessons, just in Word documents or PDFs. That way they can print them off and have them for class. And what happens is those same documents we actually pull up on our desktop, so that's what they see. And then as we go through the lesson, we'll go down through the sheet filling it out while we're explaining how we got there. So they have the notes, and they know how it works, and it's just been a wonderful setup so far.
Did as you were working through this, are you the only one that teaches, or does the pastor of the congregation also use this to teach the virtual students?
Pastor has actually, he was the one that started it out first, and then I have taken over right now until December. But Pastor has been wonderful in using the technology, I would say, especially during the first few weeks while we were trying to work out the kinks.
Mm-hmm.
But now he's quite comfortable with it. He knows how to set up everything, get the students online and joined in. And yeah, it's not too difficult. It's just a quick two clicks of the button and he's good to go.
That's encouraging for us non-digital natives that even the pastor can handle it. So good for him. Kudos. And what about those pitfalls? You keep mentioning that you had a few kinks to work out. Is there anything that you can share with our listeners that they can learn and avoid if they want to do something similar?
Yes. With one student, it's fine to use one program because there doesn't seem to be a lot of lag and you actually have more options that are free to you. With more students that come online, it becomes kind of a hassle. We tried the online classroom to try and share, our PDF files, and we tried to use the online classrooms for the voice and video. And the lag was so horrible that we had to just give that up. So it's, even though it's, I wouldn't say it's a hassle, but two programs, I think right now, Skype and Join Me, have just simplified everything. to the point where it's just, he knows, you know, you go to the website, you click on join me or share my screen, and the program runs itself, and then you call the people on Skype, and you can just give them the number to join in. They go to the web page, they type in the number, and they see your desktop.
Sounds pretty foolproof.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. The pitfalls, though, I guess it was kind of disruptive at first because, you know, one of the students would get, like, cut off, and then we'd have to call them back, and class would get paused, and it kind of interrupted the learning process for everybody. But once we got those worked out, once nobody was cut off anymore, or, you know, the desktop was actually shared, there hasn't been any problems yet. So
good.
Yeah, it's been a blessing.
So we were excited when we made contact with you to learn about another program that you've started in your vicar congregation. And so just really cool to get vicars that have technology influence. And we'd love to hear a little bit about how you're using another website, batchgeo.com, to help with the pastoral ministry there at Gethsemane.
Yeah, BatchGeo is a wonderful, it's kind of like a Google extension. What happened was the Board of Evangelism was looking at new ways of keeping track of members, because we use Shepherd Staff, and there's nothing wrong with Shepherd Staff. It's kind of nice, but we were just exploring new ways of new technology. With BatchGeo, we could just take in all those names and addresses, throw them in, and it would plot it out on the map for us automatically. And then you could save that as a link, and we sent those links to our members. So what happens now is the Board of Evangelism will get a link with all the information of their contacts, where they live, you know, any comments that we've made about them. They can click on wherever their contact is on the map. It'll bring up their name and all the information with just hovering and clicking. It's amazing. They don't have to sign in. They've got it in their web mailbox.
Sounds like a dream come true for a pastor that needs to make contact with his members and, you know, can pull that up on a smartphone or something like that allows them to get all the address information and mapping laid out for them in that way.
Yeah, I actually haven't thought about using it for members, but you could certainly use it for members easily. Mm-hmm. You could have all your members on one web link that you could access from your phone, and then you could actually just search the name, click on it, and it'll show you where they are on the map with all the information on it.
I also played a little with the BatchGeo site and made my own map, and I noticed that you can also get driving directions and that kind of thing really easily. So if you bring up a particular mapped, what do they call it, marker for a person's address, then you can say, you know, get me there, and it'll basically give you driving directions to get there as well. So very slick tool.
Yeah, that was the wonderful thing, was just the fact that it incorporated Google Maps and all the directions and all the wonderful things that Google Maps has to offer. I think our Board of Evangelism really appreciated it when they got their own links, because we divided our prospects into levels and areas, and we kind of divvied them out among each of the board members. And what happens is they get their own personal link now with just their members that they're kind of in charge with. So if they visit church again, or if they come by, we send them an email, hey, you want to go visit Kim again? He dropped by this weekend. Why don't you just, you know, give him a calendar, say hello. So they can just bring it up on the web link, and they already have their address, and they know how to get there.
That's awesome. I'll give you a word of warning, Vicar, that you better watch out, because they may decide to fail you in your vicar year so that you can stay a second year there at Gethsemane. So
I've actually already been threatened with that.
I bet that you have. They like those techie kind of guys, and keeping them around is a nice thing. So sounds like you're doing a lot of good work there.
It's been a joy and a blessing. The people are wonderful here in Omaha. So
very good.
It's been a wonderful encouragement for both members and the pastor that are willing to try new things.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's it's the wonderful attitude that they're at least willing to try. So,
yeah.
Donald, thank you very much for your time and blessings on the rest of your vicar year and your senior year, of course. Keep up the good work, and maybe we'll check back in to see how this is going. I think there are applications for this across the Synod, and especially for congregations who are serving remote members. This seems like a natural. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you, Donald, for taking the time. Blessings on your continued experiences there. Vicar year is just a very cool thing as you get to have some firsthand ministry experience and then go back to the classroom for a year at the seminary and use that experience. And obviously,
we'll see if they let him go back to the classroom. Yeah, that's at the sound.
It doesn't sound good, Donald. I'm sorry.
Make yourself too valuable there. I was really excited about the last thing that Vicar Tilbury talked about, the batchgeo.com website. And I'm going to have to do a little more digging on that site. That looks like it has a lot of potential for ministry application as well.
Yep. So let's move on to ministry resources, Sally.
Yeah, we want to circle back and talk about the new version of the new international version of the Bible. There is a new translation. They're calling it NIV 2011 because the actual paper version isn't going to be out until next March.
Right.
But one thing that we talked about in our show last week is the fact that the electronic version is now the default NIV version on BibleGateway.com. Now, I know many of our listeners use Bible Gateway. Maybe they just copy Bible verses to include in their bulletin or bring it up during Bible class and make reference to it. And to reiterate what we talked about last week, if you're not quite comfortable yet with the NIV 2011 translation, Bible Gateway does make available NIV 1984 version, and you can go back to the version that we've been using, or most people have been using up until last week or so when they made this change.
Right.
One challenge that we had was that we do offer an easy way to integrate Bible Gateway searches into Final websites.
Right.
Final Web is our web hosting vendor that we've partnered with at the Synod, and we have over 500 congregations and Wells organizations using Final Web, and their default search was going to this NIV 2011. But Final Web quickly added NIV 1984 as a possibility for the searching on the site, and I believe maybe they have the ability to make it the default one too. I'm not quite sure. I'll have to triple check that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it is available if you're a Final Web customer. You can go in and do an edit and verify that you are using the NIV 1984 version in a drop down menu that's available with that Bible Gateway widget on your dynamic pages. So check that out and let us know if it's working for you.
That brings up a good point, and we should probably check out the settings. So I know that we allow Final Web users to embed Bible references, and then there's a little pop-up that shows the Bible verse. I'm wondering what version that's showing now. So all kinds of considerations as we move through this transition. And actually, there was an article in Forward in Christ, the latest edition, where the Conference of Presidents has authorized a study of the new international version, and to give some advice to our congregations if this is something that we should be using or how we should be thinking about this new translation. So you may want to keep your ear to the ground there and see what's coming out of that particular commission. They've authorized some of the brightest minds, of course, in the Synod to take a look at this translation, because very dissimilarly to the 1984 version, we were really not involved with this translation at all. So we've got to get up to speed and to see what kind of differences there might be.
Exactly. So listen for more in the future on NIV 2011.
Yep. Sally, do we have any news and tech this week?
Well, we do, and this kind of circles back to something we talked about a few weeks ago, Martin. Google recently announced that they were having a new Google Code-In event. Mm-hmm. They've done Summer of Code before where you could get involved and work on some open source projects. And now they're actually targeting middle school and high school age students and getting them involved in different aspects of programming, documentation, training, outreach, etc., with different open source projects. And this covers Drupal, WordPress, Battle for Westnoff, which is a favorite open source strategy game that my boys play, and many other familiar open source projects. So the kids can actually bid for tasks that are associated with those projects. If they do one project, they get a Google T-shirt. If they do three, they get $100, and they can get a maximum of $500 for up to 15 of these different tasks. And so there's some real money behind this, and the contest actually opened yesterday for us, Monday of this week, November 22nd, and students aged 13 to 18 are eligible. So if you have kids in that age range in your school or in your home, you may want to point them to the Google Code-In website and have them check it out. And yes, for the record, my kids have already claimed task, and they're busy working on their Google task. Some of them are quite challenging. There's some coding and things that my kids aren't aware of, although my older son has done some Python coding, so he's going to try for some Python projects. And I believe Plone is one of the projects that's got some things out there, and Plone is a content management system based on Python. So there's some potential there. But my younger son grabbed one related to outreach, and it was on a project that had done different flyers and presentation type materials in Microsoft Publisher, and they wanted to convert that to Scribus so that it was done in an open source platform.
Sure.
And so he's learning Scribus and doing some conversion of some of these existing flyers. So kind of something for everyone out there.
Just a little side note, you mentioned Plone. That's actually the technology that MLC uses for their website. So
is that right?
I was not aware of that till I met with their new... Well, I guess I had heard that, you know, about a year ago when they were working on it, but when they redid their website, they moved to this open source kind of management system called Plone, which I was not familiar with until that point. So if you're interested in what Plone looks like or what you can do, you can take a look at MLC's website. And I believe, what is that,
MLC-wells.edu.
Yeah. Okay.
And who knows, maybe soon my kid will have some influence over the source code of that website. You don't know.
Interesting. All right, let's move on to picks of the week.
Yeah, and I'm going to point you to the coolest website URL I've come across lately. Couldn't resist this one. It's called laterbro.com. And doesn't that just...
Well, you got to say it right.
Check it out.
Laterbro.
Laterbro. There you go. Laterbro allows you to log into either your Facebook or your Twitter account. There's no account necessary on their actual website. You just log in and grant them privileges on your Facebook or Twitter account. And then you can schedule your tweets or your Facebook status updates into the future. And when the date and time rolls around that you've designated on your tweet or status update, that will push out to those services and it will be updated. Mm-hmm. And so I know there's probably other things that do this, but I hadn't used one in my tweeting. And so this was a good find for me, and I tested it out. It worked great. I tweeted about it, and Perry Lund tested it out for me as well. And he had a good experience with Laterbro as well. So super easy. And, you know, I was thinking for ministry applications, you may want to prepare a daily tweet or prayer or meditation that you want to put out there each day. And you could do your prep work a week at a time or a month at a time even, and schedule them. And you'll know that they're going out to your followers on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. So check it out if you're looking for that. They have a little... bookmarklet that you can drag to your toolbar and be able to easily make use of their services as well. So pretty dead easy.
Yeah, I wonder what's behind the name. I'm just going on their site now. Because there are similar tools, and one that immediately came to my mind, which we've talked about in the past, is Hootsuite. And that's a little bit more of a professional tool, although it's still free, that allows you to schedule tweets. So if sometimes your tweets come to you in kind of a fire hose fashion where you're just doing one after another after another, this allows you to spread it out and maybe gets them a little bit better read as they as you can distance, you know, between the tweets and allow people to absorb them, as opposed to, you know, the machine gun fashion sometimes that the way our minds work. So
yeah, I've noticed that I pay a lot more attention to the tweets that are out there when I wake up at 5 a.m. and start looking.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there may be some strategy behind your timing, that you time them for early morning release or whatever, when people are checking their readers and looking for things to read and latch onto or whatever.
Yeah, especially in ministry context, where the whole point is to get these things read and to tweet these when they come to mind, you know, sometimes 11 at night or whenever, is probably not the optimal reading time for most people. And as most people know, Twitter or Facebook is done in chronological fashion. So there are certainly gaps in my Twitter feeds as I'm reading through the feeds of those people that I follow that I totally miss because I just wasn't tuned in at that time. So I don't always go back, you know, 100 tweets or whatever to catch up. So good application. Later, bro.
I got it.
Okay, my pick of the week is hardware, and it's actually a router. Not very exciting, but for those of you that have to maintain wireless networks, either in your church or school or even in your home, there's certainly application here. And one that I recently purchased, my router died. I was using a Linksys or now Cisco router before, and I was just having all kinds of problems with it. I upgraded the firmware, and it was just really unreliable. And so I upgraded my router to a product that I had never used before, but I had read good reviews on, and that's the Netgear. This is the Netgear WNDR37AV. You know, catchy title, but the AV stands for AV series, audio visual series. And what routers are doing now is they're building in some smarts so that they can correctly handle the increased video traffic that is coming through our routers now with streaming. And we do a lot of streaming in our house. We use Netflix streaming and Hulu and those kinds of things. And I know in the church, or certainly in the classroom, where you've got things like United Streaming and Learn 360, those kinds of tools, it helps to have a router that's friendly to that kind of traffic. And the way it does is it recognizes that it's video streaming and actually does something called QoS, quality of service, where it prioritizes that traffic because it's very important to keep that stream consistent. Other things like web pages and those kinds of requests aren't nearly as reliant on a quality stream. So there can be some latency, but when you're dealing with video traffic or audio traffic like Skype, it's important that stream stay solid. So QoS really helps there. And these routers have settings where it will prioritize that kind of traffic. So streaming video, streaming music, those kinds of things are all important. This particular router also has dual band. And what that means is that there are two frequencies that you can use, the 2.4 gigahertz and the 5.0 gigahertz. And both of them support N traffic. The 2.4 will also support B and G, so you can segment your traffic. So you can say all video traffic is going to go on the 5.0 gigahertz band. And that can also keep the quality or the speed of all traffic up there, because when you're mixing B, G, and N, and even A, sometimes that will degrade the quality and the router defaults to the lowest level. But if you're segmenting your traffic, it allows you to kind of keep the throughput at a speed that is acceptable, especially to video traffic.
Okay, I got to get an English translation of what you just said. So you're telling me if I have my television and my iPod Touch on the same gigahertz,
yep,
the video streaming to the television is going to slow down my iPod Touch. But with this router, I can split those apart, basically?
Exactly. The basic routers will always dumb themselves down to the lowest specification. So if that's B or G. So if you have, if one of them is connecting at G and one of them is connecting at N, N is faster than G, but it'll default to a G speed to keep the traffic regulated. So this helps in segmenting your N traffic over to the 5 gigahertz network and your G and B traffic to 2.4. And they'll appear as two SSIDs. So you'll say, well, for video traffic, I'm going to go to the video Wi-Fi, and for all my other traffic, like my web traffic, I'm going to go to the web Wi-Fi, and it keeps them segmented, and that's how it obviously keeps the quality of the traffic higher, because it can segment those out.
I'm going to just take comfort that there's listeners out there, kind of like my husband, who
they'll be all over this.
Yep,
and this is really cool.
Really excited now. Yes,
and it does make a difference. It really does. Cool. Another thing that this particular router has is what's called a guest network. So especially when you're at home or even at church or school, you can create a network that's totally segmented off. So this is for security, where they have their own SSID. So you can say, go to the guest network SSID, and here's the password just for that. So you don't have to give out your password, your home network, or your school or church network password. They can kind of be on their own. This is great because, you know, people are constantly now coming into an environment where they're expecting Wi-Fi, and this is a great way to provide that without giving out your regular password.
We faced that challenge when we did our adult computer ed classes, and people wanted to bring their laptops along, to class, and we were just with a single password to our whole church network, basically, and
exactly.
So that would be awesome to have.
Yep. So really, you have three networks in one, and there's all kinds of other features. I'll throw you another term, DLNA, which is the ability to stream video and music to a DNL-enabled TV or media player without a PC. And you can go to their site. We'll probably provide a link. But there's a couple routers that do this. This one is just the one that I'm most familiar with because I'm using it. And very easy setup and good range, which is important, and some good options here. So I think wireless.
Did you mention the price tag?
It's about $150, so it's not one of the cheaper routers out there. But for what you get, it also does have USB storage, so that you can plug in a whole hard drive and make that available on your network at a particular web address. So it provides that for backup and those kinds of things if you want to provide a network-enabled backup solution. This provides that as well.
Maybe you want to go out on Black Friday and purchase a 2-terabyte portable drive or something like that.
Oh, yeah. I got a 1.5-terabyte drive for, I want to say, like $70 at Walmart the other day. Just incredible. So
it is amazing. My brain can't wrap itself around sizes.
That's a lot. Large. That's a lot of stuff.
Yeah. 5 years, we'll be laughing about us saying that.
Yep. Let's move on to our listener feedback, I think. No, sorry.
My goodness,
jump the
Martin,
gun.
You can't skip the
I'm
contest.
Heavily medicated, as our listeners from last week know. I was fighting a cold and still fighting a cold, but through the wonders of medication, I'm feeling a little bit better, but it's also skewing my ability to get through this show. So we're doing a contest, right?
We are. It's called the Christmas 2010 Wells Tech Scavenger Hunt. And last week, it wasn't much of a scavenger hunt. The idea behind it is that we're hiding these QR codes. And these images will be throughout the website, and we'll give you clues each week where you can find the current week's code. And as you decipher these QR codes, you're going to get clues to a mystery solution. And the week of December 15th, we'll publish our last QR code. And that week, we'll have an entry form available for our listeners. so that they can give us that mystery solution and be entered in a drawing for a $25 Cafe Press gift certificate where they can make all their Wells Tech Christmas dreams come true.
Yes, that's right.
Loads of Wells Tech goodies out there in Cafe Press.
So last week it was really, made it real easy on you. You just had to find the QR code on the show notes page. Not that difficult. You did have to find a way to read the QR code, which may be difficult for some, but you can use that with any smart, you can get that on any smartphone, or Sally even made it dumb simple and you provided a web tool that will actually read that for them. This week we're going to make it a little bit more difficult, although not overly so, and all these codes are going to be embedded someplace on the Wells Tech show notes pages. This one just doesn't happen to be on this particular show notes page. You may remember our conversation earlier in the show about a tool called Mikogo, and I threw out a challenge there. Tell me what that actually means, what that translation is in English. This is kind of a related clue. We actually mentioned Mikogo a while back on a show. And if you were maybe to find where we might have mentioned that and looked around on that particular page, you might find another clue. So Mikogo is your clue, and you might find a QR code, you know, somewhere on that page that might help you with clue number two.
Oh, I can hardly wait. I'm so excited.
So you've got clue number one under your belt. Clue number two, just think Mikogo. Look on the show notes page where we might have mentioned that in the past, and you'll have clue number two.
There you go. Now it's time to go to community feedback, and we've got lots of community feedback to share.
Yep.
Excited about that. First up, we heard from Pastor Steve Bauer, and he mentioned to us that in our show last week when we were talking about newsletters, actually, I think it was when we talked with Naomi Hinkle in the interview, she mentioned that one of the sources for images that she used was the Wells Inspirational Image Set that's out on Flickr. But I failed to put that link in the show notes. And so I went back and edited that show. And now you can find that link in the show notes, and we'll have a link in this week's show notes as well. So if you aren't familiar, Wells has a public group where people share their imagery, called Wells Inspirational Images, and you can go there, and many of the images are royalty free, shared with Creative Commons license, so you can make use of those images on your church or school website or in your publications. Just make sure you check out the licensing and give proper attribution if necessary.
Yep. The next piece of feedback actually was through our listserv. I mentioned this earlier in the show as well, where I had a question I forget who asked me the question now, to look back at the listserv, but a question from the field about Steve Lachman, it was, had a question on hearing assistance. So they have a system or an aging system in their church that would allow those that are hard of hearing to have some kind of wireless hearing system where they could hear the sermon and what's going on in the service through the sound system. And that's not an area where I have a lot of expertise, but I thought, hey, let me ask the listserv, the Wells Tech listserv. And boy, I got just a ton of awesome feedback of people who actually had real world experience with all kinds of systems and this concept called a hearing loop, which I was not familiar with, which seems to be the way to go. So we've actually added a page on the Wells Tech Wiki, and that's wellstechwiki.wells.net, of all the feedback, or you can also go to the listserv itself and look at the archive for this particular discussion. But all kinds of good experience and advice on providing hearing assistance devices, whether they be wireless or these hearing loops, those kinds of things, and all kinds of do's and don'ts. So if you are in the market for something like that, or even if you have your own experiences that you would like to share, please go to the listserv and do that.
Very good. I had a similar experience in that I got a question from the field, this time from John Kunkel at Trinity in Minocqua, Wisconsin, and he was looking at setting up a network server so that they could do file sharing within their school. And he's looking for different ideas about what type of server to set up, what software to run on it, what hardware that you need for the server, system backups, and filtering for the server. And so I'm going to throw that question out to the listserv. I hope I get as good a response as you got about hearing assistance devices, Martin. And certainly I'm throwing it out here on the podcast as well, and would love to hear from any of our listeners about what they have set up in their school or church for network server. So stay tuned, and we will probably do another Wells Tech Wiki page and start trying to gather some specs and ideas for anyone who might be in market for this kind of thing.
That's just that listserv is just so valuable that you can put out a simple question like I did or you did, and have the ability for not just a couple of answers, but a whole series of people who have real life experience with the question that you're asking. And but what a valuable resource that is. I'm just really Absolutely. Impressed with the people that are frequenting that list.
Mm-hmm. We have a DIGO group for Wells Tech. And if you aren't a member of our DIGO group, we invite you to join. Start using DIGO to share links with the group. This week, a couple of links were shared, one by Jason Schmidt to Hooda Math, HOODAMath.com, where there are games and tutorials and worksheets and movies, all kinds of resources for learning math. So that would be great for classroom teachers. And then Gail and Jason both shared a link in the DIGO group to a recent blog post by on the Free Technology for Teachers blog by Richard Byrne. And it's about one of our favorite services, Martin, called Bitly. Bit.ly, which allows you to shorten URLs, now mm-hmm. has a service where you can bundle shortened yep. links mm-hmm. and send people a group of web addresses. So if you aren't familiar with that, you might want to check out this blog post and try it out over at Bitly.
Yep.
Via Twitter, a couple of new things that we wanted to share too. One is that I had a new follower this week that kind of tripped me off to some interesting things that are going on. The follower is called T3 Seminars, and we'll include a link to their Twitter account in our show notes. And from their Twitter account, I read their profile and followed further to their website, which is t3seminars.com. And on their website, you'll learn that this is two Wells teachers who are doing presentations and training related to technology in the classroom. Mm-hmm. So their goal is really just to make it not intimidating and help teachers get involved using technology, integrating it into their curriculum. And I want to say that it is Ted Klug and Adam Miller, maybe, from Appleton, Wisconsin. No, I'm sorry, it's Adam Metesky. Mm-hmm. It was an M. And these two guys have joined and are offering these seminars and things. You can find information about it online. Most of them, I think, their schedule kind of played out over the summer, but I'm expecting that they'll be doing more of that, and they've started tweeting some really great links as well. So check out T3 Seminars, and best wishes to Ted and Adam as they undertake this.
Very good.
Also via Twitter, I picked up on a link to Gethsemane Lutheran School's Flat Stanley Project, and it's a new wiki that's out on the web that Jason Schmidt is promoting, where anyone can print out a Flat Stanley and have them visit their school and then document it and be included in his wiki. So he set up a page for each state, as well as international participants. And our school here at Sleepy Eye had Flat Stanley, the Pilgrim version, visit yesterday. So in honor of Thanksgiving, we had a Pilgrim version of
cool.
Flat Stanley. Children's book where the kid gets flattened like a pancake and you can mail them in an envelope. There's a whole website around it, flatstanley.com, with all kinds of resources where people have reached out internationally to share Flat Stanley around the world. And now Gethsemane's doing it, and they already have probably six or seven states covered, a high school in New York, and just all kinds of participation already. So it's really neat to see their wiki develop.
Mm-hmm.
And last up, we heard from listener Steve Mathwick, who I believe is at St. John's in Oak Cliff, Wisconsin. And Oak Creek, there you go. He said he truly enjoys listening to the music of Don Gilhar, who's one of our Wells musicians that we include regularly on the Wells Tech podcast. And he is looking to find some of her music for sale and where he could find a website for her, that kind of thing. And that had been kind of a mystery for me. I've looked before and tried to find her music online. And actually, we solved that mystery this week, Martin, because Don Gilhar is no longer Don Gilhar. She is Dawn Michelle Williams. She got married.
Uh-huh.
So that's why we weren't finding her stuff out on the web, because she's under a different name now, her married name. And we have a website, a Facebook page.
Congratulations to Dawn, by the way.
Yes. And we are happy to be able to link to her now. So we'll include those links in the show notes. And then in the future, when we play the music, we'll make sure and include her links as well.
Great. Great music too. So I look forward when
very gifted pianist.
When her music rolls around on the Wells Tech podcast. So that's it for community feedback, I think.
Yep.
And if you want to provide feedback, we would love to have you do that. And there are many, many ways to do that. WellsTech.wells.net is, of course, our show notes page, and you can definitely leave a comment there. WellsTech@wells.net. We get quite a few emails at that location. We'd love a voicemail, and we have a Google Voice number that you can call. Real easy to remember, 405 for Wells. That's 405 F-O-R-W-E-L-S, or 367-9357. Twitter, if you use the hashtag WellsTech, we'll find it and share it. Of course, we have our Facebook page, and if you want to start a discussion there, that would be a great place to do it as well. That's facebook.com/WellsTech. Sal, you already mentioned our Digo group. We also have a Delicious group, and you can use the WellsTech tag there. And we also referenced our listserv, a great place to ask and answer questions, and you can find a link to that on our website.
We'd love to hear from our listeners, Martin, so please keep those comments coming.
Yep. And if you would like to connect with myself or Sally, you have many ways to do that as well. Sally, on Twitter, you are a Wells Tech trainer, correct?
That is correct.
And mm-hmm. Facebook as well.
Facebook, I think I'm just Sally Draper.
Nope, you're just Sally Draper.
Plain old me.
And I'm M. Spriggs on both, if you'd like to follow along. Next week, I'm kind of excited about next week. We have two co-hosts joining us, two additional co-hosts joining us. This is our Gail show, as we like to say, Gail Potratz from New London. But we're also asking Jason Schmidt, many of you familiar with Jason, a frequent contributor to the show, our tweeting teacher. But we asked him to join us because our subject of the show is a technology, which we've just referenced, is Digo, D-I-I-G-O, a social bookmarking site that Jason makes good use of. I am a devotee at this point because I found it to be extremely useful in some of the workshops that I do, and Gail is also a Digo user. So we are going to plumb the depths of what Digo can do for you as we focus on classroom technology.
I'm going to sharpen my pencil and take notes because I have a lot to learn about Digo.
And apparently, there is a lot to learn about, and so do I. Yeah. And hopefully Jason can kind of school us on mm-hmm. Digo, so to speak. So tune in next week as Gail and Jason join us, and I'm looking forward to that show a lot.
Me too.
Our Wells featured artist of the week is Stephen Bautista, his song Brand New Day from his album Abandon. We appreciate you joining us, everybody. Thank you, and we will talk to you next week. Have a blessed Thanksgiving.
goes on.